This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 12th of August 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 12th of August. And this week our editors were Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now the main headlines this week are Doctors Failed to Spot Fractured Rib, The Doomed Building with a View, and Call for Rethink on Design Briefs. So let's have the story behind the first headline story, please, Shirley.
Doctors fail to spot fractured rib. Doctors fail to identify a fractured rib that led to the death of a diabetes sufferer, an inquest heard. The family of Jean File from Chandler's Ford are also angry that there were other alleged failings in her care at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Mrs. Fryer, 79, of Nursery Road, died at the hospital on March the 23rd of complications caused by the fractured rib that she suffered in a fall in hospital. During the inquest at Winchester Coroner's Court, John File, her husband, described the management of her diabetes at the hospital as pretty hopeless. The inquest heard she was admitted to hospital on February the 21st after feeling unwell and confused. She was diagnosed with an acute complication of diabetes and was treated with antibiotics and intravenous fluids. Mrs. File was transferred to intensive care, where she made a quick recovery. By February 23rd, she was transferred to the McGill Acute Medical Unit, where doctors believed she was getting better. However, on February 24th, one of her insulin injections was missed. On the same day, she also suffered a fall and a fractured rib was not diagnosed by doctors. The inquest heard the failure to give her the insulin dose was due to an omission by a doctor and was not recognised by a diabetic nurse until 11:55 a.m. However, medical consultant Dr. Jimmy Chong said this would not have caused Mrs. File's fall that morning. Mrs. File was discharged from hospital on March the 3rd, but was readmitted on March the 17th with severe chest pain. Once again, doctors failed to diagnose the fractured rib when they carried out an X-ray. Further tests the following day were abandoned, as a junior doctor feared a pleural tap could lead to a collapsed lung. The procedure was eventually carried out on March the 22nd. However, the bleeding continued and Mrs. File passed away a day later. A post-mortem by Dr. Adnam Al-Badri revealed there was a rib fracture and blood in the chest cavity around the lungs of Mrs. File. Dr. Al-Badri gave the cause of death as a hemothorax. Since the death, the hospital say they have made changes, according to Dr. Chong, who said they have carried out education sessions for staff on the topic of diabetes and the importance of insulin injections. Senior coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of accidental death. Mr. Short said, "If it had not been for the fall on February 24th, I do not believe she would have died, and the hemothorax was the prime reason for her death." Jean was an insulin-dependent diabetic. On March the 24th, one of her doses of insulin was missed as a result, her blood sugar was raised and she sustained a fall, as a result of which she suffered a fractured rib, which was not recognised at the time. He added that if the hemothorax was diagnosed sooner, then the anticoagulant treatment she was on may have been stopped, which may have helped. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said, "I would like to offer my sincere condolences to the family and friends of Jean Fyle. We cooperated fully with the inquest, leading to the coroner's conclusion of accidental death. Our sympathies are with Mrs. Fyle's family at this sad time."
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, the doomed building with a view, opinion divided on tower block demise. It has towered above the city for 50 years, offering the best views of Winchester. Now the former Hampshire Constabulary headquarters is set to be demolished to make way for more than 200 new houses. These stunning views over the city will be lost. A date for demolition has yet to be announced. Developer Barclay Homes has finalised plans to demolish the force's former base on Romsey Road, replacing it with 190 flats and 18 townhouses. The scheme was approved by planners in February. Affordable housing will also be supplied, with 83 of the units leased under a rent-to-buy scheme. The police tower block is one of the highest-placed buildings in Winchester and is visible miles from the city on approaches such as the M3 and the A272 at Cheesford Head. However, the building itself has divided opinion, with some claiming it spoils the city's skyline while others hold it in high esteem. When plans for the new estate were announced, Winchester City Councillor Ian Tate said, "It will be a sad day when the old police HQ is taken down. It's a significant building in the city. I've grown to love the building as I've lived in its shadow for many years." Hampshire Constabulary moved out last November to occupy a new £4.5 million base on Tower Street. More than 300 staff are located at the new site. Mottisfont Court, previously owned by Hampshire County Council, has utilised the space with an operations room and a number of meeting rooms, as well as a gym. Michael Lane, Police and Crime Commissioner, said, "Modernising our police estate to deliver the best working environment, to deliver operational effectiveness and look after our people is a key priority. This sale follows on from the move to co-locate with the Fire and Rescue Service in our new joint strategic headquarters. This sale of the former headquarters will deliver funds that can continue this modernising and improving estates programme by reinvesting the money raised. The scheme is set to become one of the largest ever new builds to be created in Winchester city centre." Chris Gilbert, Managing Director, Barclay Homes Southern Division, said, "We are delighted to have acquired such a prominent site in the historic city of Winchester. The benefits for the community will be twofold, as Barclay deliver much-needed quality housing to the area, and the proceeds of the sale of the building will be reinvested back into the police force," added Mr. Gilbert.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is Call for Rethink on Design Briefs. A Winchester architect involved in the botched station approach scheme has criticised the City Council for the way it handled its design competition. Design Engine Director Richard Jobson criticised the council for running a highly unusual competition which required incredibly detailed information to be provided. He called for a radical rethink on the way the council handles big projects. Council leader Stephen Godfrey yesterday said a review would be carried out. Mr. Jobson told Architects Journal, "The contest involved four dialogue sessions over 4 months with selected representatives from the city and their commercial agents, who were very influential. The work submitted was not far off a full planning commission, but both architects were paid only £15,000 for their work. Bidding costs for the final two teams are thought to have reached about £100,000 each," reported the magazine. Mr. Jobson added, "Clearly, it signifies a complete breakdown in the process and, from what I understand, a root and branch rethink of how the city procures projects in the future. It is also particularly upsetting as a local practice that, following the collapse of Silver Hill, our city has allowed this situation to happen again. We hope that the lessons learnt will result in the recognition of the positive contribution architects can make to the development of cities and that our intellectual property is better valued. Design Engine came second to Hopkins Architects, only to see city councillors last month scupper the office, retail and residential scheme amid public criticism that the plans were too big. Opposition councillors criticised the design brief, with Martin Todd saying the wishes of local residents had been dumped in favour of a chase for maximum development and maximum cash. Hopkins and Design Engine received low marks from the design jury, but scored highly on the commercial assessment. Hopkins received a lower design jury score, but beat Design Engine on the commercial assessment, which required large numbers of parking spaces and one overall. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said of Mr. Jobson's criticism, "I don't disagree. Any unsuccessful bidder will be unhappy with any process. There are always going to be difficulties using a new way of procuring a contractor for the first time, and this is the first time pretty much in this country. It was only introduced by the European Union last February." But Councillor Godfrey added, "The concerns expressed and the considerable expenditure rather puts one off the idea of using this as the preferred procurement route. We will do a full review of the process."
And that concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, letters from Westminster, and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Bowron, Stuart Bowron, at Challoner House, aged 72. Edwards, Jean Edwards, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 88. Klingsheim, Jessica Klingsheim, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice. Marsh, Kenneth John Ken Marsh, peacefully following a short illness, aged 87. May, Stephen Ronald Steve May, aged 61, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice. Olivia, Peggy Olivia, peacefully in the Andover Nursing Home, aged 101. Summerbell, Una Summerbell, peacefully aged 79. Now we're going to have Christian comment, read by Shirley.
Right, Christian comment, written by Mary Gray, and it's headed Rediscovering the Holy Grail in Brittany. Summer holidays have again brought me to Brittany. Here I discover that paganism and Celtic Christianity have become intermingled in enchanting ways. One of the most famous examples, familiar to Winchester, is the mythical quest for the Holy Grail of Arthurian legend. In Brittany, there at some time appeared Broceliande, a magical off-forest and secret location where lived the magician Merlin and Vivien the fairy. 2,000 years ago, this magical forest covered inland Brittany. It was a dense forest of ancient oaks and beeches that drew their vital essence from the granite and red subsoil, and was dotted with endless trails, ancient burial mounds, menhirs, standing stones, and dolmens erected during the Neolithic period. Enchantment enough. The memory of the ancient people who had erected these stones had already been lost in the mists of time. Yet the mysterious atmosphere of Broceliande has generated countless myths and legends. It was an ideal setting for the Arthurian legend, where Merlin guided King Arthur in his quest for the Holy Grail, that mythical and mysterious object whose magical properties give immortality, peace, and harmony. but only to the most deserving. Brusselland, now called the Forest de Pampont, is still a magical place today. Only the purest of Arthur's knights could bring back the Holy Grail and place it in the centre of the famous round table. In Christian legend, the Holy Grail became the cup from which Jesus drank at the Last Supper, brought by Joseph of Arimathea to Glastonbury. It then became a symbol of divine grace, granted only to those who reached the highest levels of virtue. It was once used by the Church to encourage the sacrament of Holy Communion. It has also become, through the ages, a symbol for what is most cherished or longed for, even in secular contexts. The vision of the Grail seemed an unattainable goal, a dream beyond dreams. The Holy Grail has been used as a theme in fantasy, historical fiction, and science fiction, famous most recently in Dan Brown's novel, The Da Vinci Code. Psychologists have also invoked its symbolism. For example, Emma Jung and Marie-Louise von Franz also used analytical psychology to interpret the Grail as a series of symbols in their book, The Grail Legend. This actually expanded on interpretations by Carl Jung. Why invoke this in today's world? Not only because the Grail theme continues to be popular, not only because the sacred places of Brittany still hold enchantment, I believe that the Grail legend appeals to the deepest human longings and aspirations. Embedded in Celtic spirituality, it holds an irresistible appeal to set off once more to embody our longings, to attain our dreams. In Christian spirituality, it is the burning desire to be part of the kingdom of justice, love, and peace that Jesus offered. It is the urge that inspired the aging Ulysses of Tennyson's poem, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Excuse me. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upperbrook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 11 letters this week. And what's the one read by Noel?
Chris House says, the poor state of NHS. Sir, it is a pity Philip Dunn, MP, Minister for Health, or any other minister, was not in the Bishop on the Bridge, one of Winchester's better public houses, last Saturday night. If they had been, they would have seen at first hand just what a state the National Health Service is in. A lady had collapsed on the floor, obviously in great pain. It must have been around 1 hour and a quarter later that an ambulance turned up. During that time, despite paramedics working tirelessly to ease the woman's pain, the poor lady screamed, shouted and moaned incessantly. It sounded like she was being tortured. As you can imagine, and through no fault of the woman, the staff had to stand by and watch with dismay the establishment empty. And yes, before you write in, I know it was a Saturday night, and yes, I know paramedics, ambulance men, and hospitals are understaffed. They have to operate under extremely difficult circumstances and do an excellent job. I simply thought how this illustrated just how poorly the health service is, and what an appalling state this government is in. Chris Howes, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Let's have the second letter to the editor, please. Jane.
And this letter from Adrian Bates is headed Cause for Worry. Sir, I am astonished that Mr. Brine gives so much admiring endorsement of the City of London, especially welcoming the likes of Goldman Sachs, the very same bank that advised Philip Green regarding the squalid disposal of BHS, Chronicle July the 28th. London is attractive to such outfits as Goldman, itself once described as a giant vampire squid, exactly because they have freedom to do exactly what they want with other people's money, yours and mine, and in the process brought about the biggest financial crash the modern world has ever seen, and which in itself stands behind the Brexit vote. If his view is that holding sway in government, notwithstanding Mrs. May's opening speech as PM, we should all worry mightily, never mind Brexit. And that was from Adrian Bates, Church Street, Mitcheldever.
And this one is headed Avoidable Mess, and it's from Kate McIntosh. Sir, Paul Barclay's analysis of the defects in the process which has led to the present impasse on station approach is largely correct. I disagree with his conclusion that any development would be better than no development, and find it hard to conceive that he, as the well-respected head of an architectural practice, really believes this. The reputation Winchester City Council has acquired for serving up poisoned chalices to architects is richly deserved. They have treated the two finalists in this so-called design competition contemptibly. I say so-called because it is axiomatic to any design competition that any submissions must be working to the same brief. In the two final schemes, the accommodation on offer was substantially different. All this bungling was entirely avoidable. They, the officers, were offered a wealth of free expert advice, both from within the City of Winchester Trust and from the 2020 group. Professionals experienced in the successful procurement of high-quality developments for institutional clients. These officers were convinced of the superiority of their own modus operandi, resulting in the gagging of jury members, some of whom have expertise in the field and could have warned Cabinet of the impending outcome. An inability to learn from past mistakes is one of the definitions of stupidity. Both finalists are firms with excellent track records. It is therefore the procurement process and the brief which has brought about this second train crash. And that was from Kate McIntosh, MBE RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
A letter from Stephen Gates is headed Rescue Economy. Sir, Winchester City Council's website records that at a meeting of full council on July the 21st, the decision was taken not to make an appointment to the highest scoring bidder in the design competition, and the procurement process was abandoned. It was with a growing sense of frustration that I attended the council meeting to hear the debate about the new station approach development. The sense that I gained was that there was a higher focus on addressing detailed issues around the process rather than having a wider vision to the needs of businesses within Winchester. Winchester needs a growing and vibrant business community which funds the business rates, puts people in shops, restaurants and pubs, and is an important contribution to both the day and nighttime economy. In light of the vote by councillors to effectively stall the design process, we now urgently need to move beyond the demands of party politics to address the real needs and concerns of businesses in Winchester and provide high-quality office space in which to grow and expand. A survey on behalf of the EM3 Local Enterprise Partnership indicated that 71% of businesses say that it is difficult to find suitable property in Winchester. We cannot allow this recent decision by councillors to leave the very real impression that Winchester is now closed for business. The councillors involved should carefully consider their accountability as decision makers who affect all elements of Winchester's future, and businesses play an important role in this. It is the rates paid by businesses that will be retained locally by the council under new devolution arrangements to shore up declining funding. It is time for Winchester to come of age as a city by attracting inward investment for its economy, new businesses for a modern, vibrant city quarter around the station, and more customers and visitors to grow its lively retail, leisure and cultural offer, while all the time maintaining its renown as an historic city that also enjoys an excellent academic reputation. Stephen Gates, Chairman, Winchester Area Committee, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce.
This letter is from Mrs. J. L. Sheridan and headed Give Us a Voice. Sir, you report in the July the 28th edition of your newspaper that councillors Cook, Green, Izzard and Scott abstained from voting on the station approach plan. These people obviously need reminding that they were not elected simply to sit on their hands in meetings and subsequently to collect their generous expenses. They were elected to give their constituents a voice. It is to be hoped they will do so in future. And that was from Mrs. J. L. Sheridan, Manor Close, Winnall, Winchester.
And this one is from Paul Twelfthtree, headed Public Meeting. Sir, following on from my letter that you published in last week's edition, in which I suggested that Councillor Kim Gottlieb was being neglectful in not starting work with the Central Winchester Regeneration Committee to bring forward plans for Silver Hill 2, I am very pleased to hear that he has finally pulled his finger out and the committee is now scheduled to have its first meeting on September the 7th at 6 p.m. in the Guild Hall. Despite his efforts to have these meetings held behind closed doors, it will be a public meeting. I hope as many as possible will be able to attend and hold Councillor Gottlieb to his promise to bring forward a more attractive and commercially viable scheme for Silver Hill. And that was from Paul Twelfthtree, Burriton Road, Hairstock.
Pauline Moore says we deserve more. Sir, in answer to Paul Bulkley from Snug Architects criticising Kim Gottlieb's voting against the station approach scheme in last week's edition, I say thank goodness for Kim and others who have Winchester's best interest at heart. To all others in the City Council who just want development at all cost, I say stop empire building and take note of the fact that there are many residents who do think Winchester deserves better. Pauline Moore, King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester.
And John R. Bowley writes, object to plans. Sir, may I draw your attention to the recent brochure posted to residents in Otterbourne giving a glowing account of a proposed development of 90 homes on land off Main Road, Otterbourne. The developers, Gladman, have produced this brochure in the hope that any questions will be answered quickly and without further debate by current residents. I would hate to disappoint them, as I'm sure, like me, there will be objectors to this massive development. For years, we, the residents of Otterbourne, have been subjected to constant pressure from developers who hate to see open and empty fields. I would like to register my objection and hope that there will be many other residents who will join me in passing their objections to the Parish Council and Winchester City Council prior to any formal applications by this developer. And that was from John R. Bowley, Poles Lane, Otterbourne.
And E. Mayer has this letter headed, Council has a lot to answer for. Sir, with regard to last week's front page story, Chronicle, August the 4th, concerning the closure by the City Council of 16 Water Lane, I know Val Smith and James Green, and I am familiar with their situation. She is 63 years old and has serious health problems. Most people would consider her to be vulnerable. If the council had intervened at an early stage to offer support, safeguarding and possibly alternative accommodation, it would not have been necessary to force her onto the streets. She's now in a hostel. She could not control the number of visitors and the house became overrun to the point where the neighbours, rightly, complained that they felt uncomfortable living near them. The council failed to recognise a developing problem and to deal with it properly. Val Smith and James Green have been portrayed as villains, when they are just ordinary people who, unfortunately, have a drink problem. E. Mayer, Chester Road, Winchester.
Tony Wyman says the city needs vision. Excuse me. Sir, if only Winchester's problems could be solved by just closing down all the car parks. There are no simple solutions, and Catherine Turnus's letter, Chronicle, August the 4th, said it all. The business community is in despair. Both WINAC and the council share the same problem of focusing on single issues and not standing back to see the bigger picture. The council looks at issues such as the street market, car parking, office and retail developments, each in isolation, with no thought as to how they fit together. Their projects fail because of the unforeseen consequences that come from this myopic approach. Winchester doesn't just deserve better, it needs a vision for the future. The infrastructure planning seems non-existent. We have pollution, not because of parked cars. Newsflash, parked cars do not pollute, but because of poor traffic management and public transport, and too much through traffic. Winchester could do with fewer cars in its one-way system, but then builds on the Chesil Street surface car park. It builds a park and ride next to a railway line, but doesn't build a station to go with it, and then messes up an office development next to the main railway station because of underground parking needed because not enough people can use the railway to get to it. I could go on. Each project fails because each has to do too much on its own, and there are no synergies that could make the projects work together. I'm not bitter, as has been suggested, but I am angry. I invested a lot of money in Winchester, only to find that no matter how well you try and run your business, the council's incompetence undermines you. I could never advise anyone else to invest in Winchester without a serious change in the way the town is run. The council officers have failed, and there needs to be a new management team tasked with developing a strategic plan for the future and an integrated set of infrastructure, commercial and retail developments. Unfortunately, the time to do this is not just there, and the strategic plan will most likely be a regeneration plan. Tony Wyman, Childhood's Dream, The Brooks, Winchester.
And another letter about Water Lane headed Peace at Long Last. Sir, as residents of Water Lane, we would like to thank and congratulate the council on obtaining the closure order against 16 Water Lane, Chronicle, August the 4th. Over the years, residents on their own have complained about the dreadful antisocial behaviour that has gone on. We went into the council offices not many months ago and by chance spoke to the manager of the team who eventually got the order. She listened to us and was very sympathetic and promised to look into our complaints and concerns and promised to assign an officer to us. After just over a week, she sent us an email and gave us the name of the young man who, as it happened, was new to the team and was assigned to us as residents. He met several of us in our home, and not long before that, two PCSOs came and met the same residents in our home. We were told by the young council officer that the council intended to go for a closure order, which would be the first time they would be using this particular procedure, which has only been in force since 2014. We were offered help by the council, and some of us accepted help from victim support, and this lady has proved invaluable in encouraging and supporting us, keeping us updated, and informing us as to what we could expect to happen. We did, of course, at times wonder when things would be brought to a conclusion, and it has been tough. But from our point of view, are more than happy with the way WCC, I think that's Winchester City Council, have dealt with this. Remember, this was the first time they have brought a closure order. We would encourage others in similar situation to get together. Don't try to go it alone and go to talk to the manager of the team at the offices in Colebrook Street. So, thank you, Winchester City Council. We can sleep throughout the night, enjoy our beautiful lane and environment, and not be embarrassed to invite friends and family over. And the name and address is supplied, but that was clearly from people who live in Water Lane in Winchester, and is accompanied by a photograph of the terraced house number 16, which was at the cause of the drink and noise problem, and now is apparently completely boarded up.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. It's now time for your say. The world football transfer record is set to be broken with the £89 million fee for Paul Pogba. We asked readers if there's too much money in the sport, and Shirley's got the answers.
Well, the ones who've got the answers are these. They've stopped in the street. The first one, Melvin Feltham, 64, who works for Brewers of Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, said, "There is far too much money involved in football. I think there needs to be a cap. I think it's ridiculous. They have too much money, these clubs." And then the second one, this lady, Gail Monaghan, 31, trader at Flat White's from Winchester Town Centre, said, "I have always thought the money in football is ridiculous, considering doctors and nurses should be getting more than footballers do." And then Michael Couch, 74, retired, of Chessel Street, Winchester, said, "There is definitely too much money. It would be good if there was an international cap on transfers." And then lastly, Nate Catch, 26, illustrator of Upper High Street, Winchester, said, "I think the Pogba fee is insane, but it's just the nature of football. How can a player be worth that much money? But it is all relative, really. In 5 years' time, it will be about £250 million.
Now we're going back to the mist of time and searching our dusty files for historical items. We'll start with 25 years ago, read by Noel.
Yes, two items from August the 9th, 1991. The first one is headed "Travellers Angry." Chilbolton Parish Council has been accused of making defamatory remarks about a small group of travellers encamped in West Down. The accusations came from the annoyed travellers this week after they saw a letter of objections to their occupation of one corner of the down at Chilbolton. The Parish Council protest letter was written to the Hampshire County Council Principal Assistant County Secretary Mike Crewe. It explained, "We have appealed to the Hampshire County Council on a number of occasions to have these people moved. They are causing a great deal of embarrassment to the whole parish, and we consider that the time has come for a very strong action by you to reclaim the site and evict the people." And the second item is headed "Kingsworthy Fight." Almost 300 Kingsworthy residents packed a village hall to overflow in voicing objections to a proposed development of 300 houses in by Lang Homes. Protester George Bulpit of Springvale Road said, "This is not a housing development, it's a village tacked onto Springvale Road." Lang Homes of Milton Keynes have applied for outline planning permission for the development, which includes a community health centre and a village park. The meeting passed a resolution with no votes against, supporting Kingsworthy Parish Council's objection to the 63-acre development.
Jane's going to take us back 50 years.
And 50 years ago was August the 6th, 1966. Firstly, important technology. Mr David Price, MP for Eastleigh and Conservative frontbench spokesperson on science and technology, said that Britain could find its role in the world by aiming at scientific leadership when he addressed the Eastleigh Division Conservative Association luncheon clubs at the Northlands Hotel, Southampton. "The key to the long solution of many of Britain's problems lies in the better understanding of what modern technology can do for us, and then to apply it more enthusiastically and more urgently," he declared. And secondly, magnificent climax. The majesty and pageantry of Winchester Cathedral was emphasised in a glorious climax to the Southern Cathedrals Festival held there last weekend. attended by the mayors and civic dignitaries, church leaders and members of parliament from the three dioceses, a procession entered the magnificent west doors of the nave to a fanfare sounded by the trumpeters of the royal signals. The high point of the festival was reached when a solemn Eucharist was sung in the cathedral by the combined choirs of Winchester, Chichester and Salisbury.
And it's over to Shirley for 100 years ago.
Right. 100 years ago, August the 12th, 1916. And this is in two sections. The first one is headed, Shocking Lift Accident. Shortly after 6 o'clock on Tuesday morning, a terrible lift accident occurred at the Lion Brewery, Eastgate Street, Winchester, involving the death of Thomas Farrell, a boy of 16 years, who was employed there as assistant cellar man. It appears that Farrell and another employee named Hankin were duty to bring some hogsheads from the cellar to the second floor. They placed the beer in the lift, operated by electricity, and then Hankin, operating the lift switch, started the journey. But to the alarm of Hankin, the lift did not stop at the second floor, although the switch was released. Hankin then opened the lift gates and jumped, bruising himself in the fall. What Farrell did was most unclear, as Hankin did not see, but it seems he tried to follow his colleague's example, jumped feet first, was caught by the head and carried up the shaft. Death was mercifully instantaneous. And then, fall of Gorizia. On Wednesday, Italian troops entered Gorizia. The heights west of the town were occupied by Tuesday. From these positions, the remaining Austrian detachments were driven out, leaving behind them much material. They were pursued by cavalry and bersaglieri, cyclists. Over 10,000 prisoners were taken in the operations which culminated in this victory.
And finally, Noel's going to take us back 200 years.
August the 12th, 1816, two items. One headed, Death at Barge Yard. A carman was killed on Monday at a barge yard by the falling of a bale of goods from the slings of a crane, which was in the act of being lowered from one of the upper warehouses onto a wooden cart below. The bale weighed 4 cwt, and coming directly upon the carman's head, put an immediate end to his life. The poor man has left a wife and 5 or 6 children. French Army Masses is the second piece. By accounts from Lille, inserted in the Brussels papers, it appears that the French are very active in increasing their army. Officers of all ranks who served under Bonaparte, but not marked as decided enemies of the Bourbons, are admitted into actual service, and in this way an increase of 100,000 men is expected to be effected in 2 months. The Russian officers in France are assiduous in cultivating a good understanding with the people and are getting into favour. On the other hand, it is insinuated that sinister means are employed to circulate sentiments unfavourable to the English. The French government is very vigilant in preventing the introduction of British manufactures through Flanders.
And it's back to the present, because Jane is going to read an alternative look at the news with Bulgarum Diary.
And this week, Bulgarum's Diary refers to two particular photographs. The first is the road between Otterbourne and Compton, and the pavement that runs alongside it, which is completely overgrown with a very magnificent buddleia in full flower, but obviously not enabling other people to use the path. And Bulgarum writes, "Never underestimate the power of a good trim. Residents near Winchester are shocked by overgrown hedges on the stretch of road between Otterbourne Hill and Compton. This picture by Daniel Taylor shows how the hedges are a clear obstruction for anyone walking on the pavement, and concerned residents have taken to social media to complain. One resident even joked they might get their shears and get the council to charge them for their labour. becomes, after Balgarram also reported, wobbly pavements in Winchester. It is no secret that local authorities have had to tighten their belt in recent years, but the effects are really starting to show. We hope this horticultural horror show is sorted out soon. And the second photograph is a photograph of a two-storey car park, an open car park on the top with other cars parked below it. And Balgarram writes, "New rail car park looks like this." There aren't any computer-generated images from the architects because the scheme did not require a planning application. So this car park in Fleet is the nearest thing to see how the Winchester Railway Station car park will look. Southwest Trains is set to build a second level on the car park of Stockbridge Road to provide an extra 60 spaces, with perhaps more to follow. The rest of the 200-space car park off Stockbridge Road will be closed during the work, due to start next month and finish by the end of the year.
Now it's time for the editorial comment, and it's read by Shirley.
Right. And it's headed, "Habel's Contribution and Inspiration to Us." Nothing ever stays the same, even though there are a large number of people in Winchester who would wish it so. Places change, institutions rise and fall, people come and go. But it is always sad when long-established links are severed. And so it is with Danny Habel, who has announced the ending of his ties with the Sleep Shop on St George's Street. The last part of the family business that has been in Winchester since 1945. His parents came to England in 1939, fleeing Nazi Germany, and settled in Winchester to set up a thriving furniture business. In the beginning, Danny's father would deliver furniture from the back of a Norton motorcycle, but at its peak, it had two shops in Winchester, including a large one on Jury Street, that is now the old jailhouse, and one in Andover. Thousands of people will have sat and slept on Habel's goods. Habel's was one of the longest-lasting traders in Winchester, and there are only a handful left. Jeremy France, Warren's, and the Hampshire Chronicle spring to mind. Towns and cities need people like the Habels, dynamic people with a vision, not frightened to launch something new, even at the risk of failure. They had no fear of the future, no fear of change, a good example to us all. So we thank him for his contribution to Winchester.
Now it's time for Letter from Westminster, and this week it's by George Hollingbury, and Noel's going to read it for us.
Traditionally, August is a month where politics tends to disappear from people's radars as Parliament is in recess and many go on holiday. But this year, I'm positive some in the country will be a little disappointed as our leaders spend their summertime getting to grips with a plan for Brexit, while the media remains hungry for new developments. I don't think we'll be disappearing quite so thoroughly this summer, especially with terrorist atrocities in Europe sadly dominating the headlines too. So Brexit and terrorism are just two of the many challenges the new Prime Minister will face, come rain or shine, in the years to come. Some she will have control over, others she will not. This is the same for any leader, and Theresa May is quite capable of dealing with anything that comes her way. I think she's made an assured start, as shown by her meeting key players in Europe and here at home in the first few days of her Downing Street tenure. Recognising we must all work together, Europe and UK-wide, to make Brexit and our future relationship work sounds simple, but many a politician would fail to grasp it quite so convincingly. I'm delighted in the first instance that the PM has made it clear that there will be no rush to trigger Article 50, the mechanism for our exit, until our UK negotiating position is clear. This is vitally important, as we have only one chance to get it right. So over the summer, much work will be done to canvass a broad range of views and firm up what our strategy will be. Much has been made of the Leave campaign having no plan, but that's history. The majority of people voted to leave, and a plan there must now be. In my role as Prime Minister's Parliamentary Private Secretary, or PPS for short, I will be very busy this autumn and beyond, forging important links between the PM and her MPs as this strategy takes shape. My job is to listen, feedback, persuade, and be sure that colleagues' views are heard in Downing Street. So I'm certain I will have my hands full because, quite rightly, Brexit is dominating not just Westminster, but the whole country. It's certainly a great honour to be trusted in this role by the PM, but I have experience of it, as I did the same job for her when she was Home Secretary. These will be momentous and sometimes difficult months and years ahead, but I believe they are also going to be very exciting as Britain forges its new place in the world. A happy summer to everyone. That's George Hollingbury, MP for Meon Valley.
It's time for What's On. On Saturday the 20th of August, at the Badger Farm Community Centre, there is the Winchester Horticultural Society Autumn Show, and that's from 2pm to 4pm. On Tuesday the 23rd of August, at the Winchester Cathedral Lunchtime Concert from 1 to 2pm, and this will be Nicholas Hands on oboe. This concert is free, but there will be a retiring collection. On Monday the 29th of August, which is Bank Holiday Monday, at Winchester Cathedral at 4pm, there's an organ recital by George Castle, and who is the Assistant Director of Music. Tickets for this recital are £10 and can be obtained from the Cathedral Box Office 01962 857 275. On Tuesday the 30th of August, the Sunrise Senior Living Week is going to have a tea party to raise money for the Romsey Cancer Support. This will be from 2:30 to 3pm and can be booked at the Cathedral Box Office. On Saturday, the 3rd of September, it's the Littleton and Hare Stock Show. That's from 1pm to 5pm. Finally, on Saturday, the 3rd of September, also on the same day as the Alsford Summer Fair. And for further information about that, 01962 738 748. Now, the lighting up time ends on Friday the 12th of August at 5:48am and begins at 8:33pm. And on Wednesday the 17th of August, it ends at 5:56am and begins at 8:22pm. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And the first one is Spirit of Rio Samba Rolls In. The Brazilian Samba spirit came to the Brooks Shopping Centre in Winchester to mark the start of the Rio Olympic Games. The shopping centre had two multicoloured giant avian amigos to the awed delight of youngsters. Children also got into the spirit and enjoyed making their own bird masks at a free craft workshop. It comes as the Olympics gets into full swing after a stunning opening ceremony last Friday. The Samba spirit will continue with an Olympic-themed flag-making session on Saturday, August the 13th, and then a medal-making workshop the following Saturday, August the 20th, both between 10am and 4pm. The Brazilian-themed event is a rare bit of good news for the shopping centre, which is seeing its flagship store Beals shut for the final time this Saturday. A fixture since the centre opened in the early 1990s, most of the store was this week empty, with only one floor still selling heavily discounted goods. And this is accompanied by some delightful photographs, firstly of the two enormous, very brightly coloured parrots wandering around the centre. There are adult male feet, I believe, poking out of the bottom, but long necks heading towards a little girl who's looking rather nervous in case those pink, orange and brightly coloured beaks are a bit too close to her. and also a workshop table where children are making their own brightly coloured puppets.
Youngsters spruce up Holmes Terrace. Residents at a Winchester care home received help from volunteers who gave up their time as part of their National Citizen Service. A group of young people aged 15 to 17 from across the county helped out at St. Cross Grange care home. The project was to make one of the roof terraces more appealing and welcoming for both residents and visitors. After planning the scheme, they put their creative skills to good use by painting garden furniture as well as planting new flowers. Not only did the young people volunteer their time, but they also raised funds to buy painting materials and an abundance of plants. The visit was hugely beneficial from an educational perspective as well. The NCS volunteers benefited from meeting the residents and gaining an understanding of how dementia affects people in their later life. Residents, on the other hand, enjoyed interacting with the young people and watching them work. Home manager at St. Cross Grange, Susan Munro, said, "We are delighted that these young people have given up their time to do something valuable for our care home. We hope they found it as rewarding as we have."
Royal in tribute to good neighbours. Princess Alexandra attended the 40th birthday of Hampshire's Good Neighbours service at Winchester Cathedral, celebrating 40 years of volunteers in Hampshire carrying out acts of kindness. Founded in 1976 with just six groups, the service now supports more than 120 groups and more than 4,000 volunteers. Good Neighbours volunteers play a key role in providing help in the community, such as offering transport to health appointments, lunch clubs, and social contact to reduce loneliness and isolation, and practical support. Groups also offer wider social activities such as trips to cafes, National Trust sites and concerts at local venues such as Winchester Cathedral. Andrew Robinson, Chief Executive of the Diocese of Winchester and Chairman of Hampshire Good Neighbours, said, "Good Neighbours provides a vital lifeline to many in our communities, especially those who may otherwise feel lonely and isolated."
And now, housing firms discuss future of new homes. Hampshire parishes celebrated National Rural Housing Week with the Hampshire Alliance for Rural Affordable Housing by welcoming new housing associations to the partnership. Representatives from 10 local parishes joined HARA for afternoon tea at the Half Moon and Spread Eagle pub in Mitchledever. Parish councillors were able to find out more about the work of HARA, talk to other parish councils who have provided new affordable housing, meet the new housing associations, and hear how new affordable homes can help keep businesses and services open in villages. Will Helen of Mitchledever Parish Council told everyone that to keep life in the community, you have to allow it to grow. John Botham of Mitchledever Parish Council said these sorts of developments keep communities thriving. Since 2005, the HARA Partnership has delivered 392 affordable homes in villages across Hampshire, providing homes for 1,400 local people. HARA is made up of six Hampshire authorities: the County Council, two National Park authorities, Action Hampshire, and the Homes and Communities Agency. Following Hyde Housing's decision in late 2015 to end development in a number of areas, HARA began the search to find new partners to continue building across Hampshire. After a selection process, the HARA board invited the Hampshire Village Homes Consortium of five housing associations to join the partnership. The five will work together with HARA to ensure that 50 new affordable homes are delivered across rural Hampshire each year until 2020.
Rotary President sets out her goals. Winchester Rotary has installed its president for the 2016-17 year, with Fiona Whitehouse taking over from outgoing Anthony Arkwright. Businesswoman Fiona runs her own business, PA Anywhere, which provides virtual admin support to small businesses and charities. During her year as president, she plans to add to the fundraising plans and focus on charities connected with hearing impairment, having been born profoundly deaf herself. During the 2016-17 year, Winchester Rotary will be celebrating its 90th anniversary, as well as the global centenary of the Rotary Foundation. Meanwhile, Winchester Rotary said it is delighted, along with Alresford Rotary, to be sponsoring Torin Hoynes from Peter Simmons College as a participant in the Rotary Georgia Scholars Scheme. The Mayor, Councillor Jane Rutter, welcomed Torin to Abbey House recently to wish him well for his year in Georgia in the American state. He is the 8th Peter Simmons College student in 10 years to take part in the scheme to study for a year in the USA. Since 1946, Rotarians in Georgia, USA, have promoted world peace through understanding by offering scholarships to international students for 1 year of study in Georgia colleges and universities. The students become adopted members of a Georgia host family, living on campus at the college they attend. Winchester Rotary is involved in many charitable events, including organising the annual Clarendon Way Marathon between Salisbury and Winchester, Christmas carol singing in the High Street, and a swimathon in February, as well as a number of smaller events throughout the year. And accompanying the article, we have some coloured photos of everybody looking very happy indeed, with the retiring president, Anthony Arkwright, passing the chain of office to Fiona Whitehouse.
Here's an incredible story. Brave Dad Alex in gruelling journey. Here's the Stockbridge dad whose battle to rebuild his life has already made him an inspirational figure. But Alex Lewis is about to embark on another challenge after beating a near-lethal infection that ravaged his face and also resulted in all his limbs being amputated. Alex and a group of fellow amputees are preparing to kayak along a 170-mile stretch of coast off southern Greenland starting on August the 26th. The gruelling expedition has been organised by Hampshire-based Pilgrim Bandits, founded by Special Forces veterans with the aim of helping injured soldiers live life to the full. Earlier this year, the charity invited Alex to become a civilian ambassador for Pilgrim Bandits because of his remarkable can-do attitude. His life was turned upside down in 2013 after a common cold developed into something more serious and tests revealed that he had contracted Group A streptococcus. The normally harmless bacteria is usually filtered out by the body, but in his case, it turned into blood poisoning and toxic shock syndrome. His organs started to shut down and he spent a week in a coma as the deadly bacteria wreaked havoc throughout his body. Doctors were forced to amputate his left arm and both legs above the knee. He also underwent a pioneering but ultimately unsuccessful 16-hour operation to save his right arm. But the former publican from Stockbridge has waged an incredible battle against adversity. Earlier this year, he was the subject of a Channel 4 documentary, The Extraordinary Case of Alex Lewis, after he underwent several operations to rebuild his face and learn to walk with the aid of prosthetics. In one heartbreaking scene, his son Sam, now 5, refuses to kiss him after he undergoes surgery to reconstruct his lips. Now, 36-year-old Alex is preparing to brave challenges of another kind. He and fellow members of the Pilgrim Bandits expedition will spend 10 days exploring the rocky coast of southern Greenland, negotiating glaciers, icebergs and other hazards. "It's a great chance to push myself," he said. "I would never have taken part in something like this prior to losing my limbs, but when you face what I have, anything seems possible. One of the biggest challenges will be manoeuvring myself across uneven and frozen terrain. The disabled sailors will be paired with able-bodied people in double kayaks, with fee-paying kayakers joining the trip to offset some of the costs, as well as helping the charity achieve its goal of funding a purpose-built kayak training centre. They will paddle for about 5 hours each day, eating food that includes a type of fish that must be caught as they kayak. Andre Edwards, the charity's general manager, said, "This is a hard trip, hazardous, gruelling and fraught with dangers. We've employed highly regarded guides, but this trip will certainly challenge everyone taking part. We will be completely isolated and away from all civilization. On the upside, we expect to see all manners of wildlife, including seals, eagles and foxes." The expedition is the latest in a series staged by Pilgrim Bandits, which is based in New Milton. In 2012, they retraced the steps taken by commandos who flew to Nazi-occupied Norway during the Second World War and sabotaged Germany's attempt to make an atomic bomb. The following year, they saluted the courage of servicemen who became known as the Cockleshell Heroes. Described as one of the most daring raids of the war, canoeists paddled 60 miles up the River Gironde in France and sank several enemy ships.
And families could get a fracking payout. Families in Hampshire could be given thousands of pounds if they are affected by controversial plans for fracking. Prime Minister Theresa May says a £1 billion shale wealth fund will set aside up to 10% of the tax proceeds from fracking to benefit the communities hosting wells. But now the Prime Minister is amending the scheme so the money can go direct to the residents. It is expected that the new fund could deliver as much as £10 million to each community where wells are sited. Downing Street declined to estimate how much payouts could be worth, but it is thought that individual households could be given up to £20,000. The change could go some way to countering residents' resistance to fracking, but has been blasted by critics as a bribe. Gas companies have already been granted 8 licences for fracking in South Hampshire. According to environmental campaign group Greenpeace, the areas affected include Lamb between North Baddersley and Fairthorne, near Botley, Kingsworthy and Stockbridge, and Chiltern and Amport, as well as sites in the New Forest. It is unlikely that all the sites would be fracked, because many have potential to generate conventional gas instead. Malcolm Prince of Winchester City Council for the Worthies said more information was needed on the deal. "I would want to listen to the people first before making a decision," he said. Julian Lewis, MP for New Forest East, said the cash would sweeten the pill. He said, "Those power resources are so significant that it's inevitable that they will be exploited. The important thing is to make sure that they're not exploited in the areas of sensitivity in environmental and geographical concerns." Speaking ahead of the launch of a consultation on the fund, Mrs. May said she wanted to make sure that individuals benefit personally from economic decisions. She said, "It's about making sure people personally benefit from economic decisions that are taken, not just councils, and putting them back in control over their lives." Tony Bosworth, Friends of the Earth campaigner, said, "Communities across the UK have made it clear that they don't want fracking. Local people won't suddenly be bribed into accepting this unpopular practice, which poses risks to people and the environment." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a Friends of the Earth group with posters and leaflets to hand out in the high street, objecting to the fracking plans. Chris Gillam is one of them, who writes many letters to the Chronicle. But they are having a discussion with the public as the public walk by about this difficult issue.
Leading architects in line for prestigious accolade. One of Winchester's leading residential architects has been shortlisted for a prestigious award. Witcher Crawford Architects have been shortlisted for the Wood Awards, the UK's premier competition for excellence in architecture and product design in the world's only natural, sustainable material. The architects based in St. Thomas Street are hoping the design for the rear staircase in Portledge House, a Grade II listed manor house in North Devon, will triumph in the awards interiors category. The staircase was created as a distinct contemporary insertion into a medieval service wing of the historic house, which Witcher Crawford has comprehensively remodelled for its new owner. The staircase blends with wall panelling to create a homogeneous design using English oak chevrons between darker walnut fins. On the staircase, the walnut fins form spindles supporting a leather handrail. The quality of design of the bespoke sculptural piece was the key factor in achieving approval from Historic England and Torridge District Council's conservation officer to replace an earlier and much altered staircase. Partner Richard Crawford, Jeff Crawford, said, "The house has suffered a series of unsympathetic changes in recent decades, and we have been careful to uncover and restore original details where they survive. However, where the historic integrity of a room has been badly compromised, we have approached these spaces with a view to creating contemporary designs that reflect the quality and status of the house, and which add to a new phase to its historical development. We are pleased that the judges have appreciated the concept, the design, and the craftsmanship of this piece." Witcher Crawford worked with Tiverton-based joiners Warren Hughes Furniture, who made the staircase in a combination of European walnut and local storm-filled English oak. It was engineered off-site using CNC machining and assembled by hand using traditional joinery techniques. The shortlisted projects will be displayed at 100 Design Exhibition held at London Olympia during the London Design Festival in September, before the awards are made in November.
Archaeological diggers reunite. Dozens of people return to Winchester for a reunion of diggers who helped pioneer urban archaeology. They took part in groundbreaking digs across the city centre between 1961 and 71, led by Professor Martin Biddle, that changed the way towns are studied. In total, some 2,000 young people took part in the digs. They returned from the USA, the Netherlands and all parts of the UK. Their contribution was to make it possible to write the lost history of Roman Winchester, of King Alfred's new city of the 9th century, and of Norman Winchester with its cathedral and palaces. A reception was given by the Mayor, Jane Rutter, on Friday in Abbey House, together with a welcoming talk by Professor Biddle. The digs set the pattern for so many other towns and cities throughout the UK and beyond. Professor Biddle is now Director of Winchester Excavations Committee, who organised the reunion. The weekend included guided walks through the city's Saxon streets, a visit to the City Museum, the Winchester Excavation Committee's Hampshire Cultural Trust find store, and dinner in the Wessex Hotel, which was built on the first site to be excavated, and where there was an exhibition of memorabilia and artefacts from the excavations to further stir memories. Despite the intervening years, all the returning diggers found the energy to revisit the main sites where they had worked. Many recalled staying in dilapidated buildings, including an old school and even in the old Bendix chocolate factory. Everyone spoke of their enjoyment as they saw the result of their work, as they visited Castle Yard, Cathedral Green and Wolvesey Palace. Imagination had come into full play, though, when they visited the Brook Street site, now a car park. The Mayor and her escort also joined the afternoon walk from Cathedral Green to Wolvesey Palace. All expressed happy memories of meticulous excavations, finding skeletons, cleaning bones and innumerable oyster shells, washing pottery, trundling barrows and learning all the skills of the often arduous work of archaeology under the supervision of Martin Biddle and his team over half a century ago. But one person mystified was Janet Frankham, who could not find the well she excavated near the cathedral. Professor Biddle said, "We were young then, and we were all still young at heart now, and could recognise the sites where we dug and usually each other, and recall the finds we made. What a wonderful weekend to bring us together again after 50 years. And this is accompanied by some delightful photographs, including one of Janet Frankham pointing to a piece of flat ground saying, where's the well gone? And there's a picture of the whole group, the reunion at at the Wolvesey Palace, and then a group of them all walking along Saxon St Clement Street, and finally the diggers on Cathedral Green with Professor Biddle.
And now we have Festival Shows Value of STEM. A Winchester school hosted a unique learning festival. Pupils and staff at St Swithin's School enjoyed Mestival, which is the first festival of its kind to provide young people with an insight into the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and mathematics. Pupils enjoyed 3D printing, virtual reality, headsets and flight simulators. The speakers included BBC science presenter, comedian and entertainer Helen Arney, television presenter and author Stefan Gates, John Macy, senior lecturer in computer animation from the University of Bournemouth, Dr. Chris Budd, professor of applied mathematics at the University of Bath, and Eleanor Schofield, conservation manager for the Tudor warship Mary Rose in Portsmouth. Pupils also enjoyed zorbing and talking to apprentices, graduates and university professors. A programme of STEMinars offered presentations and advice from speakers. In addition, Mestival visitors experienced displays and exhibitions by Rolls-Royce, IBM, the British Army, the Royal Navy, Jaguar Land Rover, Vodafone, the Prudential, Hampshire Police and many, many more in the STEM zone. Head of Mathematics at St Swithin's and one of the organisers, Stephen Power, said, "Mestival was a fantastic day. We were delighted to have high-profile speakers and exhibitors demonstrating how studying STEM subjects can lead to a much broader range of careers." And there are two photographs of St Swithin's pupils, one watching a science experiment, luckily outside perhaps because there's smoke emitting very heavily from something which they're experimenting with, and the other in which a team has made a bloodhound rocket car, which was a winner in their team competition.
Awards celebrate the best of county's police. From demonstrating bravery in the course of duty to rewarding those who go above and beyond, the best of Hampshire Constabulary's officers and staff were honoured at a special ceremony. The Chief Constable's Awards were held to recognise excellent work, as well as the courageous actions of members of the public who have taken action to protect others. A group of Winchester police officers and staff bravely faced a man with a gun threatening to shoot at North Walls Station last October. Through cool thinking and courage, they disarmed the man. Edmund Holliday, 22, of Browning Drive, Fulford, was convicted of possessing an imitation firearm and sentenced to a 12-month community order. Award winners included Chris Arben and Peter Evans, who stopped on the M3 to help a man lying injured on the carriageway. Chief Constable Olivia Pinkney presented the awards at the ceremony and said, "This is one of the most enjoyable parts of my job, getting the opportunity to congratulate my officers and staff for the great work they do. Hearing their inspiring stories of immense bravery, great professionalism, and innovative thinking gives me great pride. It is also a wonderful opportunity to thank those members of the public who have gone that extra mile. It is encouraging to know that there are so many people within our force and within our communities who are committed to making Hampshire and the Isle of Wight a better place to live and work.
This is a delightful, nostalgic story. It's called 1066 Hog Chapter Roars In. Winchester welcomed more than 20 Harley-Davidson motorcyclists to the city last Sunday. Hosted by the Brook Shopping Centre, the bikes parked in Middlebrook Street for visitors to view. Liz Marsden, Marketing and Communications Manager at the Brook, said, "We were really excited to be able to host the Harley-Davidson Owners Group Ride. It was an unusual request, but one we were happy to grant. All HOG chapters are sponsored by an official Harley-Davidson dealership. John Shaw, Harley-Davidson sponsors 1066. The chapter's name is unique, as it is the only chapter with a number as its name. It comes from their base in the town of Battle, named after the site of England's last invasion by William the Conqueror. John Pedder, member of the chapter, said everyone from the group enjoyed the ride out." And there's a lovely picture of a group of, I have to say, largely middle-aged, smiling men and women, all dressed in traditional bikers' wear of black leather and jeans.
And now a 100-seater restaurant plan. "A prominent Winchester building is to be turned into a restaurant," writes Will Rimmel. "An application has been submitted to convert the former Tony and Guy Salon into a more than 100-seater eatery. Applicant Aquanova LLP want to merge the salon on St George's Street with the empty Movers and Shakers next door. A well-informed source told the Chronicle that they believe Aquanova are acting on behalf of the popular Caribbean food chain Turtle Bay. The chain already has a well-established following and are known for their jerk chicken. When approached for comment, a spokesman for the chain did not deny the claim, adding, 'We can't confirm anything as of yet, but keep an eye on our website and social media pages, as this is where we announce everything.' Tony and Guy, which occupy the St George's Street building for more than 20 years, moved to Southgate Street in April. In March, it was reported that another major restaurant chain had pulled out of the running to take over the store. However, Italian food specialist Carluccio's did not rule out moving to another site in the city." And this is accompanied by the two empty buildings looking very blank, Movers and Shapers and Tony and Guy, both on the corner of St George's Street and Jury Street.
Royal Navy dock honoured for migrant aid work. A Royal Navy doctor from Winchester has been honoured for her work rescuing migrants in the Mediterranean. Surgeon Lieutenant Louise McMenemy, 30, was on board HMS Bulwark when the ship was sent to assist the migrant crisis last year. The former Peter Simmons College pupil led a team of medics working around the clock, caring for hundreds of people whose boats ran into difficulty trying to cross from Libya to Italy. The Med is the world's deadliest migration route, and thousands have died trying to cross it. Half of those taking the dangerous crossing come from countries like Syria. Her efforts have been rewarded with a commendation from the Navy's fleet commander, Vice Admiral Ben Key. Mrs. McMenemy said, "This deployment opened my eyes to the amount of suffering these people go through and what they're willing to risk to find a better life for their families. I was humbled by the people I met and was immensely proud of my medical team." Louise, who joined the Navy in 2008, is serving at Queen Alexandra Hospital, Portsmouth. And with the article, we have got a large colour photo of Vice Admiral Ben Key presenting the Fleet Commander's commendation to Surgeon Lieutenant Louise McMenemy, and they're both smiling mightily.
Trout and About Festival packs them in to delight organisers. Foodies packed into a Hampshire town to savour delights from across the county. Hordes of people made their way to Stockbridge to enjoy the tasty treats being served up in the annual Trout and About Food and Craft Festival. Volunteer organisers hope to showcase the best of food, produce and crafts from Hampshire with stalls set out along the town's high street. Event coordinator Tania Casey said this year's event had been absolutely brilliant. It was lovely. We had an amazing number of people here. The street was absolutely full with people. All our stalls sold. They all said they had a successful year. The entertainers said they were pleased too. We had about 120 stallholders here. We were completely sold out. We were turning people away. Organised by a core team of volunteers, the event helps to raise cash for local charities and good causes in the area. We are very passionate about local food and craft producers, Tania added. All the money from raffle tickets and other sources all goes into local charities. All our local volunteers decide who they want to put forward to be beneficiaries. Each year, we support 4 or 5 different charities.
And now, family microbrewery making a name. Something special is brewing in Upper Swanmore. A new microbrewery called Broken Bridge Brewing has been making waves since it started. Head brewer and proprietor Jim Fullagar, 26, has been busy mastering the craft, and the new brewery is very much a family affair. Mr. Fullagar's father, Charlie, built the grain hopper, installed the coal store, and did the plumbing. Jim's mother, Sue, and his 75-year-old grandmother, Joy, all help out. The new microbrewery produces about 400 litres of ale 6 times a month. Its flagship ale is called It's 5 o'clock somewhere, 5%, which is a modern American pale ale brewed with rye and Vienna malts and predominantly Cascade and Chinook hops. Mr. Fullagar learned the brewing process in the Flower Pots Brewery at Cheriton and the Red Cat Brewery in Winchester. He said, "We are used to working together and previously had another business running with Village Shop in Meanstoke, where I still help out. We're well known in the area, and that is why we're getting such tremendous support." Ales from the brewery were showcased at the award-winning The Guide Dog Pub in Southampton. They were a huge success, and with 2 days they had sold out. And they also sold out at the Hampshire Bowman Beer Festival. And there is a photograph of the smiling young Jim Fullagar surrounded by the vats and pipes and ladders necessary for making beer at his Broken Bridge Brewery in Swanmore near Bishop's Waltham.
Nominations are open for Community Star Award. A previous winner of the University of Winchester's Community Star Award said it was great to receive recognition. Winchester Young Carers Project, WYCP, was one of 3 winners in 2014. WYCP is an independent charity providing support to those aged 8 to 17 years old who care for another person. It was rewarded by the university for its work offering young carers weekly support groups, regular out-of-school activities, one-to-one support, befriending, peer monitoring, and advice and guidance. Activities and Support Coordinator at the project, Anna Hutchings, said, "The young persons really enjoyed going and receiving the award and getting recognition. We were really proud that they had won the award." The nominees are selected from within the university and wider community that reflected one or more of the institution's 6 values: intellectual freedom, social justice, diversity, spirituality, individuals matter, and creativity. They will be judged by members of the university's senior management team, a representative from the university's Surgeon Student Academic Council, and Ian Murray, editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor, said, The awards are a wonderful way to highlight and reward the tireless commitment shown by groups and individuals who are doing commendable work in the community. And along with this article, we have a lovely photograph of six of the young carers demonstrating their singing talents at Whiteley Shopping Centre.
Record numbers see stars come out to play at festival. Record numbers of music lovers were treated to a string of hits and glorious sunshine at the Wickham Festival. Queen drummer Roger Taylor, one of the biggest names at this year's festival, appeared with Fish, Toya Wilcox and other members of the SAS band, Spike's All Stars, on Saturday night. Their appearance on the main stage came after Southampton-born X Factor winner Matt Cardle accompanied the Trevor Horn band. Organiser Peter Chegwin was celebrated another successful year. "We're tired but very happy as well. We've had a wonderful weekend here. We've been lucky with the weather. It was not good in the run-up to the event, but we couldn't have asked for better weather. The feedback has been fantastic." He said thousands enjoyed themselves in the sunshine with no reported incidents. Spandau Ballet frontman Tony Hadley headlined Thursday night after singer-songwriter Eddie Reader, formerly a fairground attraction, while Blazing Fiddles and Southampton singer Just Millie performed. Punk legends The Stranglers topped the bill on Friday with sets from Bruce Foxton's From the Jam and Slim Chance. Lindisfarne closed the family event with Steel Eye Span, Hayseed Dixie and festival favourites The Red Hot Chili Peppers.
How nice. I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 12th of August 2016. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.